This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. This week in the journal Nature Genetics, scientists announced the discovery of a gene that increases the risk for type 2 diabetes. That's adult onset diabetes. They say that if someone carries two copies of the gene, it doubles his or her risk for the disease. The discovery was made by scientists from the Decode Genetics in Iceland. And here to talk about what this gene does and does not tell us about the genetics of diabetes, how it might change the way this disease is diagnosed and treated, is Dr. David Altshuler. He's director of the program Medical and Population Genetics at the Broad Institute of Harvard and MIT, and associate professor of genetics and medicine at Harvard Med School and Mass General Hospital in Boston. He joins us today. Welcome to Back to Science Friday, Dr. Altshuler.
Well, thank you for having me.
Tell us exactly what this gene does, can you?
Well, there's two ways of asking what it does. Maybe the one people would be most interested in is what you already said, which is this is a gene that perhaps 40% of people in the population will carry one copy of it, and that increases their risk by 50% or more of getting the disease. And perhaps 1 in 20 people carry two copies of it, and that increases their risk by more than twofold. This is a new risk factor for the disease, not known until this paper came out.
And can you actually do a genetic profile of someone who may not have the disease then and see they might be vulnerable to it?
Well, the first thing I would say is that since this is a first publication, and while it's a very convincing first publication, as with all science, it should be repeated and replicated by other people before it gets into the certainly thinking about clinical applications. But let's assume that happens, and I think it's very likely it will be replicated. Then the question is, could you test someone for it? And you could actually get that information. Now, of course, the important question to ask as a patient or as a physician is that information useful? It makes good sense that knowing that might lead people to have a better lifestyle or perhaps do other things to reduce their risk of disease, but we'd want to prove that that really helped them before we suggested widespread testing. Because, of course, it's always possible that our intuition would be wrong and knowing that information alone wouldn't help patients. We want to prove that, in my mind, before we start encouraging people to get the test.
And what do you have to do to prove that?
Well, it's a good question. There is a study that was done in America called the Diabetes Prevention Program, and it actually showed that people at high risk of diabetes, that you could lower their risk by, for example, changing your lifestyle, dieting and exercising, or with a drug, although diet and exercise in this case was more effective. But we don't do that in America yet today for everybody because it's too expensive. You'd have to screen the entire population, and as upsetting as that is, that's the reality. It could be that doing a test like this could help prioritize who should have those interventions, but I'd like to see that proven by actually doing such a study before such a recommendation was made.
Is this the only gene, then, that has been identified, and does it work on its own?
Well, those are very good questions. So it turns out there's been known for some time 6 genes that cause a very rare form of diabetes, but that doesn't add up to more than 1 or 2% of the population of diabetics. Mm-hmm. There are now 3 genes known, this is the third, that increase risk in the general population. This one has the biggest effect size. In other words, it's a bigger increment in risk than the other two. But these 3 pieces of the puzzle, I think, are best thought of by the public as actually a puzzle. Imagine that you were on a weekend doing a puzzle, and if you could see the picture, you could understand something very important. These are 3 pieces. Maybe the new one is in a corner of the puzzle never seen before, so very important. But what we really need to learn how to treat this disease, in my view, is to get as much of the puzzle as possible, because that'll tell us what's really wrong, and that'll point other investigators into where they should try and fix it to make people better.
The fact that you increase your risk of getting diabetes means there must be some other factors here, because it's not a slam dunk that you're going to get it if you have the gene.
No, it's very important for people to realize that the word genetic sometimes connotes to people all or none, that this is the whole story. That's true for rare diseases caused by a single gene, but diabetes and other common diseases, they first of all have a huge environmental component. Genetics in total is just a piece of the puzzle. And then the genetics is spread over multiple genes. So a twofold increase in risk for 5% of the population is actually a pretty big epidemiological risk factor. Even if you look at things like cholesterol and blood pressure we talk about, twofold is a pretty big effect. So we shouldn't dismiss it. On the other hand, no one should take away that this is the gene for diabetes or that genes in total are the whole story. It's a complex situation, and as long as we remember that, we can understand what's going on.
Yeah, as you mentioned before, there may be much, even if you have the gene, and there may be much simpler ways instead of genetic engineering to lower your risk, such as diet, exercise, things like that.
Let me tell a story from the history of genetics that maybe will help help people see what you're saying. There's a disease, it is one of those rare genetic diseases, but it's called phenylketonuria. People may know it because on the side of certain soda cans it says, be careful, this product contains phenylalanine. That's because if you eat that amino acid and you have this disease, it damages your brain, and you'll be mentally retarded. It was figured out a long time ago that if you identify these people and they took phenylalanine out of their diet, you could lead a normal life. So the idea should not be that because a gene increases risk that a genetic intervention is needed. We would hope that genes would tell us what's going on, but maybe we can develop better ways through lifestyle and through diet or maybe through drugs to prevent and alter so that people lead longer and happier and healthier lives.
1-800-989-8255. We're talking up early this hour about genes and diabetes. We spoke with you last fall about the HapMap project, mapping genetic variation across different populations. Does this decoding and the code work here fit in with that project?
Well, it does in the following sense. The project, the HapMap project, was a set of tools and information to try and identify common genetic variants that influence disease. And this is a wonderful example of exactly the kind of fish that fishing pole was designed to find. In other words, when the project was started, we all knew, and I think people agreed, that if there were such common variants of effect, that they would be found through this approach, but there was some understandable waiting to say, well, let's see how many such things there are, and you couldn't find them until you had the tool. So you couldn't really know until you had the HapMap. This discovery, which was enabled in part by the HapMap, in fact, the authors very graciously thanked the HapMap project for doing its work and enabling their science, is only the tip of the iceberg in that they didn't comprehensively look everywhere. They looked in one place and found this gene using the approach, and that should make us very optimistic that there are other such genes that can be found by the approach, as have discoveries, for example, of two genes for a blindness called age-related macular degeneration, of genes for autoimmune diseases like type 1 diabetes, and other examples I could go on. This approach clearly yields fruit and is going to be accelerating in the next couple of years, so the relevance of this paper to that approach is an example of how it can be done and how it can be very convincing,
right,
and most importantly, provide information we really didn't have from any other approach before.
There was news this week about difference between gender. There was aspirin affecting, heart disease in one, I think, in men, but the stroke in women and things like that. And we've heard other things about gender differences, medicines being tailored to gender differences. Might that be also true with genes here with type 2 diabetes?
Well, it absolutely might be. I think that, in fact, there's lots of examples from genetics where inheriting a particular gene in one gender might have a different effect than another gender. And so that's something that we need to look for. My view as to how this should go forward is that first we need to make these discoveries and all important, reproduce them in other laboratories. We see in science that really, even though it's news the first time, in some sense, it's really believable the second, third, and fourth times. But once that happens, then we can perhaps dive into the greater subtlety of exactly in whom does this gene matter, what environmental factors does it collaborate with, what other genes. And that's the puzzle I was describing that this is a piece of.
Yeah. What about type 1 diabetes, the kind you get, the devastating kind of that people get when they're children and keep their whole lives? Any connection here with that gene?
Well, I don't believe that we know the answer to that for this specific gene. But type 1 diabetes, which makes up perhaps 1 in 10 or 1 in 20 patients with the disease diabetes, but as you said, people typically get it in their first 10 years of life, not later in life, that's a disease that also has a strong genetic component. And in fact, through very good work of many investigators, there are actually 4 genes known that affect type 1 diabetes. So far, there is no overlap between the genes found that cause type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes, but it may be that in the future some will be found. So that's a very interesting question, but to date it's turned out they look, even though they both cause high blood sugar, so they're called diabetes, it looks like they're separate on the genetic level.
Would there be any reason that this would be in our genes, evolutionarily speaking, or do we think it might be a mutation that happened someplace along the line?
Well, no one really knows yet, but there's a very interesting theory that is called the thrifty gene hypothesis. It's been around for quite a while, and it suggests that if you look, for example, at human evolution, it probably was not the case that being obese and having access to too many calories and too little exercise was a major evolutionary force when we were a very small population of people before modern society developed. In fact, it was probably the case that starvation was the major selective force, that since we couldn't yet control the food supply with agriculture and the like, that in fact sometimes you would not be able to find food and people would die, and perhaps those who held on to calories more would live longer. And so, because they could survive times that when instead of being plenty, it was famine. So there is a theory, not yet proven, that perhaps obesity is so common because, in fact, to survive through evolution, people would do better to eat more when times were good to hold on to the calories. It's just in today's world, for at least many people, there is ample supply of food, and so that drive to keep eating turns out to be a problem in the modern world where it might have been a benefit in the past.
And in the old days, they didn't have the refined sugars kinds of eating we're talking about.
Oh, exactly. And in fact, the question you asked about is the one that I actually think is perhaps the most interesting question intellectually in terms of the whole field that we're talking about. The most important question is to make people's health better. But the most interesting one may be to understand why is it the case that heart attack and diabetes and common cancers and mental illness, there are certain diseases that are the common diseases, and there are others that are rare. And we would think that, in fact, that's probably not just a coincidence. It may be that the diseases that are common today were adaptations during human evolution, but now that the environment has changed so much because we now control the environment, that things that used to be our friends are now our foes. And perhaps if that's true, it at least might change the way we think about disease. It might be a problem now, but in some cases, at least, it helped us get here.
Interesting point. Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us, Dr. Al Chuler.
Thank you very much for having me.
David Al Chuler, Director of a Program of Medical and Population Genetics at Harvard and MIT, and also at Mass General Hospital.